may all my heart remember you. Each tender look, each word I used to know, comes back to me from out the long ago.
You're listening to a song called When the Great Red Dawn is Shining. As the young men of the Newfoundland Regiment marched toward the Somme and Beaumont Hamel, they sang this song. It's about returning to loved ones back home. Now I'm reading the back passage from a book by Christopher Morey. Chris lives in Ottawa these days, but the memory of his grandfather, Howard, is never far. Howard Morey grew up in Fairyland and fought in World War I. It turns out Howard Morey was quite the writer, able to describe battlefield conditions with great accuracy and horror. Chris Morey's book is called When the Great Red Dawn is Shining. It is a collection of his grandfather's, or rather, again, his father, Howard Morey's experiences, his memoirs, something that Chris has contextualized, edited, and now released in a collected form. It is called When the Great Red Dawn is Shining. And he spoke with On the Go's Todd O'Brien about that book.
Tell me about Howard Morey. Who was he?
Well, Howard was my grandfather. He was the son of Thomas Graham Morey, a fisherman in Fairyland, owner of a fish plant, and they did all kinds of things like lobster cannery and salt fish and the whole bit. That family had been there in Fairyland since the late 1700s. Matthew Morey came over from Devon in the late 1700s with his young children after his first wife died. And that's where they started the business, Matthew Morey and Company. And it, later on, in the end, it became my Uncle Bill's company before the closure due to the loss of the cod stocks.
So he, Howard, he had signed up. He was going to be part of the first 500, but they told him, to go home first.
Well,
to get his...
his father was quite elderly by this time, and he was really the only one that was available to run the fishing business. The young John was still too young to be put in responsibility for that. So it was up to Uncle, to Dad Morey to straighten things out so that someone was taking charge of things while he was away at the war. Don't forget, they were only expecting to be there for a year. They were all told they'd be back the following Christmas, which, of course, never came to be.
What was Howard's time like in Britain? What did How did he get on there?
Well, they had a great time. They were welcomed. They were actually in Scotland. The first 500, they started down in England on the Salisbury Plains training, but by the time the C Company arrived in February, they were up in Edinburgh, and they'd been bestowed the honor of being the only regiment outside of Britain to ever garrison Edinburgh Castle. So there they were in Edinburgh Castle, and the people of Edinburgh were treating them with all kinds of kindness and bringing them home and showing them around and so on. And it was during that time that my grandfather's second cousin, Wilfred Montgomery Windsor from Aquaforte, Monty, introduced him to a young Edinburgh lass who later became his wife. And during that period of time, of course, being in garrison duty, they weren't allowed out very much. So there were occasions when they had to find all kinds of ways to sneak out, and go AWOL, basically. Sometimes the sergeants turned a blind eye for a bottle or two or whatever. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they just snuck out by whatever means they could. One time, for example, Dad Morey and a number of the others had discovered that there was a drain pipe coming down off the hill where Edinburgh Castle is, down into Princes Street. And that drain pipe was 18 inches wide. And my grandfather was a big man, 185 pounds, 6 feet tall. But somehow he managed to take off all his clothing, put that down through the pipe, and then squeeze down through the pipe himself, scraping himself in the bargain. Got down to Princes Street, dressed in his clothing, went off to a public washroom somewhere, cleaned himself up, and then went off to see his wife.
He fought at both Gallipoli and was at Beaumont Hamel for the July drive. Tell me about that.
That's true, and you're raising a very important point, because here in Canada, up here on the mainland in particular, Not too many people know that anyone from North America fought in Gallipoli. They assume it was, well, they've seen the movie, so they know about the Australians and the New Zealanders, and of course the Brits were there. A lot of people don't know that there were also French there and also Gurkhas from Nepal. But the only North American contingent that was over there was from Newfoundland. In any event, they did go in late. The first invasion by the British forces and the Australians and New Zealanders, the Anzacs, was in April of 15. The Newfoundlanders were over there in September of 15. They landed at Suvla Bay. They were caught in the same predicament that the Australians and New Zealanders and the British were. They couldn't get off the beaches hardly. The Turks occupied the high land. They just basically dug in and took pot shots at one another. A few soldiers were killed. It wasn't a major engagement. There were very, very few skirmishes. More people were left ill due to various kinds of trench fever and whatnot, and the extreme cold, believe it or not, in Turkey in the fall and winter of the year. And they finally pulled out in December and January and left there. And Newfoundlanders, the Royal Newfoundland Regiment, was given the responsibility of fighting the rearguard action. They would cut back from 100 men occupying the trenches and running between all of the guns that they had set up to make it look like there were 1,000 men there. And gradually they cut that back from 100 to 50 and from 50 to 25, and Dad Moore was one of those last 25. And they did such an excellent job that they never lost a man during the retreat, and because of that they were sent over to Cape Helles, which was another beachhead, to help with the evacuation there. And they did exactly the same thing over there. After which they went back to Egypt to regroup prior to going to France, and wound up in Marseille. Went up to the Somme, and of course we all know about the Battle of the Beaumont-Hamel, where the Newfoundland Regiment was nearly wiped out. And my grandfather was one of the fortunate ones, though at the time he thought he was unfortunate, of being held back in the 10% reserves, probably because by that point in time he was married and had a child. And it was because of that, I suppose, that he survived the battle.
Right, so he didn't actually go over the top with the, you know, the waves of...
No, he didn't. He was with the group that was to take the provisions in to those other men. But, of course, those other men were wiped out the instant they went over the top. Nevertheless, they did go out. They started out, my grandfather and the other fellows that were responsible for bringing forward the food and provisions and ammunition and whatnot. They started out soon realized that everyone they encountered was either seriously wounded or dead. There was no one out there that they could provide provisions to, and they were called back.
One of the things that really captivated me with the book was his, and you put it all in quite good context, his writing. It was just quite incredible, the descriptions of what he encountered on the battlefield.
He had a way with words. He was a great storyteller, like most Newfoundlanders in those days, I'd say. And he had traveled, too, as I said. So he wasn't, he may have had a minimum amount of education in Fairland, but at the same time, he had been educated through the School of Hard Knocks out in the West Coast. And he had a way with words. And I think, in particular, one of the best expressions that he came up with that sticks in my mind describing the aftermath of Beaumont-Hamel was he called it a butcher shop in hell. And that was so descriptive.
And
I was going to use it for the title of the book, but my publishers had better thoughts. They realized how gruesome that was. And they came up with the title. This was James Langer, my editor from Breakwater, came up with the title, when the Great Red Dawn is Shining. And that was the song that the men were singing as they went into the Battle of Beaumont-Hamel. So that was a bit more positive.
And, some of the descriptions on the battlefield of having to go retrieve bodies.
Well, because of the fact that there weren't that many of them left, it fell upon my grandfather and a number of the other men to be assigned the gruesome task of having to go out and bring in the dead when there was a lull in the shooting. And even then, of course, it was dangerous because there were snipers around. But most of the time, there was not much point in trying to bring them back because they were, you know, already decomposing. So they would basically just dig a shallow grave beside where they found the body. They'd remove the identification papers and any other personal belongings. And in the process of doing that, he describes how they'd have to open their webbing, their belts. And when they did, the whoosh of foul gas that would come out would be enough to turn your stomach. And for months afterwards, they felt that they could still smell it because it was in their nostrils and they couldn't get rid of that smell. He said how grateful he was that the mothers would never know what had happened to their sons and how they'd been left out on the battlefield in the sun for so long after that massacre.
Yes, and the amount of things he described, I was thinking the average person would go insane in about 2 or 3 days, you know?
I know, and, you know, I don't think that that came out quite so clearly in some of the official histories of the Royal Newfoundland Regiment or any other regiment for that matter. He was just an ordinary foot soldier. He had no idea about what was the overall game plan or what was going on a mile away, but he could describe in great detail what the individual soldier was enduring. The fact that they were out there up to their knees in freezing water, most of them wound up with trench foot. They had to fight off the, as well as the Germans, they had to fight off the cold, the lice, the rats. It was a horrible existence. And, of course, they were out there for weeks at a time without relief. Some of the NCOs would have been with them, but the officers had a chance to go back and get into the dugouts at least. But the ordinary foot soldier was exposed to this nonstop day and night for weeks on end before they got some relief. And even then, they were sent back into what they called supports. And when they went back to supports, they were still working all day long, building roads, rebuilding roads and trenches and things like that.
Did you spend time with him when you were younger?
I did. Dad Maury was a frequent visitor here in Ottawa, where we were living at the time, and he also spent a good part of the year touring, visiting all of his sons and daughters all over North America, and a good part of the year in Scotland as well, because his wife was from Scotland, of course, and it held a very special spot in his heart. But when I was in Newfoundland in my summer vacations, I used to visit with him and stay with him in Maryland, of course. And every now and again, we'd go up to St. John's, and I can well remember the experience of going down Water Street with Dad Maury as a young fella, and every couple of blocks he'd stop and he'd start chatting with some derelict on the street, and it would embarrass me because I didn't know that these were all former soldiers from the Royal Newfoundland Regiment, and he would never walk down that street without stopping and having a chat with every one of them, most of them alcoholics, of course, and it'd take us 2 hours to get from one end of the Water Street to the other.
Now, in full disclosure, I actually knew him when I was a boy because my grandmother lived just across from him. He lived in the Wee House, right?
That's correct. Yeah, you're actually his great-grandnephew, I would say.
Yeah, and I can't remember talking to him, but I just remember his presence in the community, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for speaking with me today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That is Christopher Maury there, the author of When the Great Red Dawn is Shining, a collection of his grandfather, Howard Maury's, memoirs of life in the Newfoundland Regiment.